welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 267 of the podcast. And it is the 27th of April, 2016, as I record this, a bit early, as when this goes out, I will be walking in the Sierra Nevada mountains in southern Spain, which I'm super looking forward to because it was actually hailing in Bath yesterday. It's crazy. It's meant to be late spring, and well, I guess not late spring, early spring, but hail was a bit much. So looking forward to getting on the plane heading south. So it is a holiday and a digital break, although I always have lots scheduled on my social media, so I won't be disappearing. I also like sharing pictures, so there will be pictures on the Twitter feed and on my Facebook author page, JF Penn Author. And this will actually also be my first multi-day walking thing, break, holiday, whatever, in about 10 years. So I'm looking forward to some challenging and beautiful walks, and we'll also be in Granada and Cordoba, both of which are amazing cities and feature in my thriller Gates of Hell. So expect lots of cool pictures, and or I might be completely offline. I don't know at the moment. It will depend how I feel. But I will certainly not be doing a lot other than walking. And this is training for my 100K, which is in July. So doing this multi-day walking is really important for that, building up stamina. So I'm really pleased that I'm, one of my goals this year was to be a more healthy author. And part of that was dictation. Part of that was walking a lot more. And we did 30K on Sunday, and that was quite tiring. But I'm really enjoying it. I think for me, walking is like a meditation, and I do really find it very helpful for my mental health. Okay, so today I actually have a session, it's a pre-recorded session on how to use audiobooks and podcasting for sales and marketing as an author. And if you did listen to that session as part of the Indie Author Fringe, it is that session, but I know a lot of you would not have listened, and I think it's really useful information. So there is a video if you would rather watch the video. There are also slides you can download on the show notes, which are always on the blog, or if you go to thecreativepen.com/podcasts, episode 267, you'll find all the links there. So this is me talking about how to use audiobooks and podcasting. So a bit of an update. I'm now well into the author mindset book. It's around 30,000 words already. I think it's going to be quite big for a nonfiction book. And in the last few days, I've been going through 15 years of my journals, tracing my own journey from, you know, sort of feeling really miserable at my job, desperate for some creative expression, how I sort of moved into doing some courses. I'd forgotten half the things I did years ago, sort of 2004. I was sort of making inroads into trying to write. There's some real angsty poetry when I got divorced in 2004. And, through to my first nonfiction book, first novel, a lot of angst along the way. And what's also funny is I'm reading the book and I'm having to learn the same lessons over and over and over again. I still don't think I've learned those lessons. But, one lesson being, for example, that the most important thing is the writing, and that I get caught up in all these other things, but it always has to come back to the writing. I'm pretty sure some of you listening can identify with that. In the end, it's much easier to do the other things, sort out your social media, do your emails, flail around with reading books instead of writing books. And I think, it's amazing how we do have to learn these same things over and over again. And for me, burnout, that energy management, I seem to be very bad at getting that right. Between 2006, 2010, it's really funny because I don't know very much, but I'm learning. And I wanted to just remind you all of that we're all learning and we're all on the path somewhere. I'm currently doing lots of courses with Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush, who are in their 60s, and they have been in this industry like 30, 40 years. So I feel like I'm learning from them. So I'm hoping that I'm helping some of you who are on the path a few steps behind me, because we're all somewhere on this path. And some people choose to step off the path and go do something else, which is completely fine. But the most important person to compare yourself to is yourself from a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago, or however far back you want to take it. But have you improved since you last checked in with yourself? And hopefully that will be a yes. What's also interesting is before I started writing fiction, I did write a lot more in my journals. So since writing novels and writing more books, my journals have become more like note-taking on books I read and seminars I go to, and less about expressing what I'm feeling. And I think that's because my books actually contain snapshots of my mind at these different points. And certainly, you know, my nonfiction does, my fiction does, in a very different way. But it's funny writing this mindset book, because part of the reason I'm writing it is maybe to try and finally learn these lessons, and so that I can keep that book on my desk for myself. And when I'm feeling a certain thing, I'll just turn to the bit in the book where it says, this is what to do when you have this certain thing. So yeah, I think for nonfiction, I really write the books I need myself, and that continues to be important. All right, so the launch for Destroyer of Worlds happened, and thanks to my pen friends for the early reviews, really useful, and it went out on newinbooks.com today, which is a great site, so really good to get that out there. But a reminder for everyone that for indies, the launch is not the point, and the launch, it will, I think, always be a disappointment if you want the spike launch of traditional publishing. So traditional publishing has to have a spike model, because the book really only has a month for focusing on before the next book in the publishing schedule comes along. But we don't have that model. We have a long tail and a long-term focus. And in fact, with a book 8 in a series, it's more about promoting the whole series or the first in series. And it's also easier to promote books once they've been out a while. So I will probably do more promotion on Destroyer of Worlds once it's gathered more reviews, once I've got book 9 done, which I've already put the pre-order out for December, end of days. And that's got to be a hell of a book. It's a big title, so I'm looking forward to that. But this is the thing, you know, people say, oh, you know, how did the launch go? And to be honest, I'm already focusing on the next book. So I think this becomes a bit of an addiction. This production and creation is just becomes the next thing. So my most favourite book is the book I'm currently writing. I'm really thrilled with Destroyer, and now I'm ready for the next thing. Although I have some real deadlines in the next weeks. So I have this mindset book, which I'm determined to get out by the end of June, I want to say. End of June, beginning of July. Then I've got a short story which has been commissioned, which I'll be doing. That's around fear, and I'll be basing that on underwater stuff, so going back to my scuba diving roots. I've also got a screenplay to write before I go to a screenplay workshop in a couple of weeks' time. And I've also started researching End of Days and started thinking about another series or a standalone, I don't know. But all these things are important, and juggling these multiple projects is part of the job. Also, a little side project of mine, the How to Make a Living with Your Writing workbook is now available on Amazon, and it includes, it's print only, so it's not on multiple stores, although it probably will be on Barnes & Noble for the extended distribution. It's a version of How to Make a Living with Your Writing, but it is
includes spaces you can actually write. So it's got extra questions and has pages for you to write in. And first of all, if you fancy that, you can find it at thecreativepen.com/make-a-living-workbook, or you can go to you can just find it on Amazon, How to Make a Living with Your Writing Workbook. And I'm really pleased with it. You know, first of all, it doesn't cost very much to turn your nonfiction book into a workbook. And I think it's really worth doing as an extra income stream, an extra product. It means people can get the hard copy and scribble in it. And I think it's a really good idea for if you have a kind of self-help type of book. And also, you know, we have to be thinking about these print-only products, and that's, I know it's something I've not been very good at, but I do think that this sort of companion workbook style does very well for nonfiction. And certainly with this mindset book, what I want to have is an ebook, a print book, a workbook, and an audiobook all available at the same time, so people can choose which way they want to engage with the material. Also, I have something very cool to share today. So for those people, again, turning your non-fiction specifically into multiple streams of income, we've talked before about turning your book into a multimedia course, which I've done with my successful self-publishing, and also Creative Freedom, which is based on How to Make a Living with Your Writing. And I had Ankur from Teachable, which is the what I use to host my courses. And now Teachable is running a free book to course summit that I think you'll find really useful. You can find all the details at thecreativepen.com/book summit, booksummit. So thecreativepen.com/book summit. And that has some awesome, and that's on in May, and you can book now. And it has some quite cool sessions, including Jeff Goins on how to turn a book into a six-figure course, how to crack the bestseller list as a first-time author. There's a session that I'm definitely interested in on hacking social marketing with Laura Roeder from meetedgar.com. And I've been using Meet Edgar now for a few months and I love it. It's brilliant. And I'm looking forward to hearing from Laura. Launch tips from Pat Flynn, who has the Smart Passive Income podcast and has put out a few self-published books, and also The Rise of the Writer Entrepreneur with James Altucher, Jane Friedman, and a ton more friends of the podcast, including Mark Dawson, Nick Stevenson. And I would have been in it, in case you were wondering. Ankur did invite me to be in it, but I'm in Spain, so I had to not be in this one. But I am promoting it because it looks super good, and it is free. You can attend the sessions live or get the recordings. So you can register at thecreativepen.com/book summit. And yes, I am doing more courses. I'm planning on doing How to Write a Novel. Now I have 9 novels and 3 novellas. I actually feel ready to share the process. And although I think we always feel like imposters, I need to do that course while I'm still at the level I am, I think. Okay, so thanks as ever for your emails and comments and tweets. I've had some lovely ones this week. Noelle from Belgium says, I was listening to your podcast with Michael Brent while colour coding my children's football socks with thread, which is very cool. Marie Madigan, catching up and while cleaning windows, sent me a picture of her view out her window, which is a graveyard. Now, I used to also live in a graveyard when I lived in Oxford. I lived in an old Catholic church graveyard. Loved it. I would love to live in a graveyard again. So thank you, Marie. Also, Marie said, a step up from what I was doing while listening to the episode with Michael Brent last year. So I've had Michael Brent on the show twice. And last year, Marie listened while wearing a green rubber suit in a hot polytunnel spraying exotic plants. So that's super. And Marie sent me an email, and I like this also. She said, my favourite episode of all time is the one about estate planning with Catherine Goldman. On those days when no other motivational tricks are working, the thought that if I died tomorrow, my nephew's grandchildren could still be going out for a monthly meal and drinks is immensely cheering. And I also wanted to mention that because I saw an article this week. Last week I mentioned Prince. Obviously, Prince died and really terribly. Well, he didn't die terribly. I mean, it was, you know, he died. But there was a thing about his estate. He has no obvious heirs. He has no children. He has no spouse, current spouse. So I haven't seen an update on that. But I wanted to remind everyone that it's very important to have a will in place for your estate. Something that I'm thinking about because my husband and I are child-free, and so happily child-free, and it's something that we all have to consider. If you have obvious heirs, then fair enough, but if you don't, then it's especially important. John Slater said, listening while walking over water on my way to work, picture of a ship somewhere interesting. Edwin Downward says, listening while making a supply run for my wife's craft business, and sent me a picture of some thread. The lovely Arizona firecracker, trying this at work today. Thanks for the idea. Listening to thunderstorms while writing. Rosie Reist in Cornwall said, took a break from cycling to listen to the show and watch the kite surfers. Favourite episode, introvert strategies, and lovely picture on the Cornish coast there. Garrett Robinson says, learning about India distribution on my morning walk sent me a funny, surprised face while out walking. Garrett is one of those very funny, naturally very funny people that I need to learn from in terms of humour. And Brittany Fichter says, bubbles and doggy fun while we listen. Spending precious time like this is my main reason to write. Sent a picture of her lovely toddler now, it looks like, and the baby who's growing up with the show, as Brittany's been sending in updates since she was pregnant. So that's really cool. And Icy Sedgwick, listening to the show while trying to find clothes on the right hangers in Primark. There you go. So today's episode is sponsored by 99designs. You can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, Joanna. So on 99designs, I do have a cool thing to talk about today because Gates of Hell, you know, I'm off to Spain, and Gates of Hell is all about the Kabbalah and the search for the key to the gates of hell. Now, when I started thinking about the book, I really wanted a custom design for the key because clearly there is no official key to the gates of hell, and I didn't just want a normal key from a stock photo site. So I went on 99designs and put up a project for the key to the gates of hell. I thought I would borrow the brains of some creative people. So essentially, I put up my project, which was custom illustration, key to the gates of hell. And I also said I wanted it to be suitable for 3D printing. Now, I changed my mind on that later on because it became quite difficult. But essentially, I said, this is a standalone image for the interior of a book, but also for the book cover. So I specified exactly what I wanted. I then made put that out there to the world, and a whole load of designers gave me some keys. Now, I've written a blog post on this because it was awesome. I got some amazing images. And this is the thing, people often use 99designs for book covers, but I do think, and I also, we used it for Risen Gods for the map at the beginning of the book, which is New Zealand, but a kind of modified New Zealand with gods and things going on. So if you need something special like illustrations or other type of design work, then 99designs can be really good for that. And the designer I used in the end, it was his first design on 99designs. So it was a really, and I really loved kind of working with a new designer, and it gave him a start to his portfolio. So I basically borrowed those brains, and then the description of the book, of the key within the book, was based off the illustration. So I actually think that's quite cool, using the design to help you write the book itself. off, which is very cool. So on 99 Designs, there's 100% money back guarantee. So if you don't get a design you like, then it's all good. And of course, remember, these types of images can be the best marketing assets you have. So you can get that Power Pack upgrade worth $99 at 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. And of course, this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon, who also now get the extra Q&A shows monthly and can ask me specific questions through there. Thanks especially to new patrons, Cindy Sherman and Jason Luke. And I really do support I really do appreciate your Patreon support. Like your tweets and emails, it really demonstrates to me that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And on Patreon, you can support even just $2 a month, so less than a coffee a month, and or you can be more generous. And of course, you'll get that extra monthly Q&A and the downloads of the previous editions. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/ The Creative Pen. Okay, let's get on with the presentation. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com and welcome to the Indie Author Fringe. And my event today is going to be how to use audio as an author for book sales and for marketing. And we're going to go through a load of stuff on audiobooks and also on podcasting. But first, just a little introduction to who I am, in case I haven't met you before. I am two people. I write nonfiction as Joanna Penn, and I have a blog and a podcast, and I'm a speaker, and I do all kinds of things for authors. I also write thrillers under JF Penn, and you can see some of my books there. I sell around the world, and I also sell in ebook, print, and audiobook format, all without a publisher. And I left my day job in September 2011, and so I'm coming up to 5 years as a full-time author entrepreneur. And a lot of the stuff I'll be sharing with you today are lessons that I've learned along the way. But of course, it wasn't always like that. And I just wanted to wind the clock back to 2008. Here's me with my very first book. So if you're just starting out, hopefully you'll enjoy this session anyway. And there will be things you can use if you're just starting out, or if you're at the point of having lots of books and wanting to expand your income. So just as an overview, we're going to go through why audio and why now, how to self-publish audiobooks with ACX, working with a narrator, narrating your own book if you fancy doing that, as I have done with one of mine so far, audio programs and how to sell direct, podcasting as an author platform, and also how to pitch podcasters with your book if you'd like to feature on programs, plus some tips on marketing audiobooks. So a big session today. And I hope you'll enjoy it. And at the end, I will share where you can download the slides with all the links that I'll be talking about in this session. So first of all, why audio and why now? Why is this suddenly such a big deal? Well, the first thing is the smartphone. And I don't know about you, but this is not a phone to me. I mean, I use this for a lot. I listen to podcasts, I listen to audiobooks, I read, I have my email, I have social media, I do research, I keep my writing notes. This really isn't used as a phone so much as my computer in my pocket. And that is the main reason why audio is such a big deal. Because of the widespread use of smartphones, certainly in developed countries, that means streaming audio in your pocket. And certainly my own behaviour as a listener has changed over the last few years. I've always listened to podcasts, but up until about 2 years ago, I would download the audio, put it on my iPod, and then go to the gym or whatever and listen. Now the episode arrives on my phone as soon as it's available, and I just start listening, whether I'm washing up, doing, you know, going for a walk, still going to the gym, whatever. But generally I'm listening to audio while I'm doing other things. And this is what many people want to do. They don't necessarily want to read a book. They want to listen to a book, maybe on a car commute to a job, or they want to listen to a podcast. So this is what you've got to start thinking. Even if you personally don't listen to audiobooks or podcasts, podcasts, think about all those millions of people who use audio as a way to keep up with what's going on, as a way to learn new things, as a way to listen to fiction, listen to stories. You know, these things are very exciting. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that this is on your phone, so it's very mobile. But secondly, in 2016, streaming internet has come to the car. So there's a picture there. Apple CarPlay, Google Auto have put streaming internet audio into cars. So now people don't even need to take their phone and have a Bluetooth adapter to their stereo. They can actually download these things directly. So new cars will now have that functionality in. So that's only going to continue to explode. There's also been a big push into subscription services, and that's meant that people are consuming more audio. So for example, audible.com.co.uk has a subscription service, which means you get one audiobook a month or two or whatever. I have a monthly subscription, so I get a new one every month, and it encourages you to therefore listen more. And also the gamification of listening, which is very exciting. The push into advertising, if you're in the US or the UK, you've seen how much Audible are pushing advertising to get people into audiobooks. The other thing is WhisperSync technology. So again, with Amazon, it's very exciting. If somebody buys your ebook and they have your audiobook as well, what will happen is they can start reading the book on their phone, on their Kindle, whatever. Say they're reading it over breakfast, then they get in their car, and WhisperSync technology means that the book will start reading to them from where they left off on the page. Now that's amazing when you think about it. So it's, you know, it syncs to where you are in the book. So this bundling of ebook and audiobook is something that also makes the price of audio much lower. Now for a customer, that's really, really good. As a producer of audio, so One Day in Budapest, for example, you can see here the pricing of it. They might buy the ebook, and this is because I'm in the UK, my screen prints of America don't come up with the exact price. So the Kindle edition of One Day in Budapest is $2.99, or it is £1.99 in the UK. And this says you can then add the audio. So instead of $22 for the audio, it's going to be $2 because you own the ebook. So you can see that for a customer, this is excellent stuff. For a author and for narrators, this is driving the profit from audiobooks down, but the volume is increasing. So you've got to think about audio as pretty much like an ebook going forward. It's going to be a similar type of product. It should be an easy purchase, an easy bundle for the consumer. And then we've seen the growth of audio. AuthorEarnings.com reported in January 2016 that 119,000 audiobooks a day are being sold, generating over $200,000 a day for authors. So that's pretty exciting, and definitely a market you want to be part of. Goodreads, which of course is owned by Amazon, have added free audio samples to a whole load of ebooks. And you can see there, Girl on a Train has that listen button. So social media sites like Goodreads trying to facilitate audio, audio sharing, audio reviews, audio purchases. And then that in the top, as you're looking at it, right hand section, you can see those badges. Now those badges are actually from my husband's Audible account, because he really loves to listen to fiction before going to sleep. So while I'm reading, he'll be listening. And he's got these badges. And I love this because it's gamification of reading. Our reading, whether it's with your eyes or your ears, who cares, or your fingers if you're blind or whatever, that, you know, these things are incredible. So the gamification of audio listening is a fascinating thing. And I know from watching him use it, how actually motivating it is to get these type of badges. So we really need to do that with all kinds of books. And also this statistic that 77% of audio purchases are fiction. People like listening to a story. That's not surprising if you think about how, as a audio culture, people have been telling stories around the fireside and listening to stories for millennia. So you can see why this is growing. And as an author entrepreneur, I'm excited about audio because it adds another income stream into my business model. Because as authors, we have a chance to turn our one manuscript into multiple streams of income. So think about it. With an ebook, you might sell it on Amazon, iBooks, Kobo, Nook, a whole load of other places. Then you might have a print edition, and then you might have the audio edition. Then if you multiply that by country markets, and then you multiply that by language, you're looking at multiple streams of income from one manuscript. And once you understand this, you see why the reasons why you want to start putting your book into these different formats. And of course, you're going to reach more readers. And this is actually a really important thing. There are some people who only now listen to audiobooks. And because you can listen to them on a faster speed, so I listen to most audio on 1.5 speed. Now, that might sound quite weird if you don't listen to audio yourself, but you know, the human ear allows you to speed these things up and still understand the content, which is my point. And then you can do it in less time. So basically, this is a quote from Jane Friedman in a recent Publishers Weekly, that reader discovery increases when you produce audiobooks and other forms of multimedia, because you can reach people in a different place. So someone who might only read, you know, physically one book a year, and actually that's quite normal, they might actually consume audio at a massive rate, and that's why it's exciting. Okay, so briefly, how to self-publish audiobooks with ACX. So first of all, ACX.com is an Amazon platform. It's kind of the equivalent to KDP for ebooks. It's at ACX.com. And the exciting thing is that we have a chance to use it. The bad side right now, as of March 2016, it's only open to people in the US and the UK. So hopefully, as audiobooks continue to march out across the world, ACX will also continue to expand. But for now, it's just US, UK. And I'll give you some other options towards the end if you're not in those countries. But the rest of this presentation, after I've shown you this, will still be relevant. Okay, so first of all, you log on to ACX and you log on with your normal Amazon account. You claim your book either with the ASIN, A-S-I-N, or the name of the book, and then you decide on the contract option. So for example, you can pay a narrator up front and keep all the rights, or you can do a 50-50 split with a narrator. I quite like doing that because there's no money up front, although obviously over time, if you sell a lot of books, the pay up front version is more efficient for you and you'll get more income. And then also the exclusivity option. So if you go exclusive to ACX, which means your audiobooks will be on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes, then you get a higher percentage than if you want non-exclusive, which means you can also sell it from your website. Then you basically upload a chapter or, you know, a part of the book that will help you decide what the best narrator is. So it might be chapter one. What I would make sure of, if it's fiction, is that it contains the voice of your main character. So if your main character is a woman, don't use a sample chapter that only has the secondary male character in. You want the book to be clear about who the main character is. The rule I've heard on this is that if you have a female protagonist, you should have a female voice. If you have a male protagonist, you should have a male voice. But hey, you'll get different auditions, whatever, and you'll be the one to decide. So once you upload, say, a chapter in a Microsoft Word document, you will get auditions. Then you listen to the auditions and you decide on the narrator and you agree the contract based on the terms you want. The narrator will then record the first 15 minutes after you've agreed the contract. That 15 minutes is super important because that's the chance you both get to work together. So it's really important to give people feedback in the audition if you're going to choose them, because once you get into actually signing the contract and then producing the audiobook, you want to make sure you have a good working relationship. So once you have signed the contract, the narrator will record the first 15 minutes. And that's another chance to give them really detailed feedback. So for example, say you have an Irish character or an Indian character and they've produced that voice with a very strong accent. You can then say, look, I don't want that accent to be very strong. Please just read it in a normal American voice. And I will use the words, say he said in an American accent or he said in an Indian accent or something like that. there have been cases of people who've been very unhappy with their audio around things like that. So very important to communicate upfront. Once the 15 minutes is agreed, the narrator will produce the rest of the audiobook, and I like to listen as they go. So, for example, I will ask my narrator to upload the first 10 chapters, and then I will go through and listen, and I will email back notes on things that might have been pronounced wrong. And basically, when that's done, you QA the files, and then you approve. And then the book is available on ACX and Amazon and Audible and iTunes in the next week or so. Very exciting. Of course, the length of the audiobook will depend on how long your book is. Risen Gods, which is here, is around 50,000 words, so it's a short novel. And you can see here it's 4 hours, 18 minutes. Now, this was a really interesting book to do because it's based on Maori mythology and New Zealand Aotearoa, and the main character is a Maori young man. So CJ McAllister, who narrated it, and I, and I'm not Maori, but I lived in New Zealand for 7 years, and we also had we also got loads of clips of people speaking in the Maori words, and it was a really interesting audiobook to do because he had to, as an American male, was learning to pronounce these words. So it's a fascinating project to do together. So I mentioned there a few tips for working with a narrator, but just to be more specific, it's very important to put into your ACX information the type of voice you want and be clear about the tone of your book up front. So, for example, a YA romance written in first person by a young woman is going to be very different to a thriller with a male protagonist in his 40s who's African-American. So you can see, you know, or you can hear the two different voices almost in your head. You have to specify that up front, and that will help you get a narrator. Also, be open and honest, and if you get an audition and you hate it, just say, this isn't a good fit for me. If you get one that you like but there are some issues, tell them the issues up front. You have to be honest in this way. Also, Q&A check as you go, so get those 5 chapters, listen to them, make comments. But very important, if you want to work with a narrator long term, don't be an idiot. You have to be a good client. Remember that you're working with another professional, and this is essentially an adaptation. What you're doing is creating a new product based on your words, yes, but the narrator is an audio specialist. They're a voice artist, and you have to respect that. So what I tend to do with my narrators is I will leave a lot of things. I won't make a fuss about quite a lot, and I will only suggest changes if there is an obvious error. For example, there's an English place called Blenheim, but it's actually my American narrator pronounced it Blenheim, because that's how it's spelt. That's one of those place names that can be very difficult. Or the Maori words, like I was saying, there were some words that were wrong according to the version of the word I'm used to hearing from New Zealand. So correcting things like that is good. You can also find pronunciations on YouTube, and if you just Google a word, you can often find the pronunciation. So I would send that to my narrator. But I would not say, you know, some personal attacks or something that undermines the narrator as an expert. So I think that's very important. The other thing is, top narrators often bring a fan base. So if you want a top narrator for your book, you will be paying a premium rate for that, but they may well bring the sales in return. Oh, and I should just add that if you start with a narrator on a series, it's best to carry on using that narrator throughout the series because they get used to the voice of the book and the voice of the narrator. Okay, so what about narrating your own audiobook? So first of all, I would suggest that if you want to try this, you do it with non-fiction, because fiction is a completely different beast. I haven't done my own fiction, but I have done Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, which is a non-fiction book. So this is me in the studio there. You can see me in the little booth and Andy, my sound guy. So you can find a professional studio near you. Usually in a decent sized city, you will be able to find a studio. They're often very small. They have have a box and there's a sound guy or girl, and you have to be able to get the production of the audio files to ACX technical standards, which is very important. So you go to the studio, you book it in advance. I did blocks of 2 hours each because I found it very, very tiring. But some hardcore sort of people who can control their breathing, which I find difficult, may do 6-8 hours straight of narration. So very important to keep your energy up. You need a lot of liquid. You know, even as I'm talking here, I have water next to me and I'm drinking it, because speaking actually does dry your mouth out. So that's important. Also, a little tip, if you take your Kindle to read from, because, or your iPad, you can't read from a book because of the page noises. You have to read from something electronic. Turn off the Wi-Fi on all your devices. Obviously, turn off your cell phone. But I was reading from my Kindle and we got this noise in the background. We couldn't work out what it was for ages, and then discovered it was the Wi-Fi on the Kindle. So just put it on airplane mode. I also found as I was reading my book that there were some things that didn't work well in audio. So I essentially edited the ebook on the fly as I was going through it. So when it's your book, you can do that, because of course you can go back and change the ebook if you like. If you're narrating someone else's audiobook, or if you're getting a professional to do it, you can't just change the book on the fly. But I thought that was brilliant. And then what I would do is Andy, the sound guy, would give me the file and then I did my edits. So what you have to remember is you never just do something where you perform or read or whatever all in one take. You make mistakes, you need a break, you will repeat the same word, you'll get something wrong. And essentially, I would just stop, I would clap sometimes. And when you clap, that creates a spike on the audio so you can see your mistake. And then I would edit that myself because I'm used to doing audio, and we'll come back to that in a bit. But you could use a free software like Audacity or Amadeus Pro on the Mac, which is what I use. So what are the costs of doing an audiobook? So if you do it yourself, as I did for Business for Authors, the studio hire, it should be around $30 to $50 per hour. And I was in there for about 8 hours for a finished 6-hour audiobook, $300 to $600 for editing, potentially more than that, depending on how difficult it is. So for me, it worked out around $800 for my 6-hour audiobook when I narrated it myself. Now, hiring a narrator to do it for you will be between $200 to $400 per finished audio hour. So it's generally going to be between $1,200 to $2,500 for a 6-hour audiobook. If obviously that 6 hours, that's for a 60, 70,000 word audiobook. If your book is a fantasy 120,000 word book, it's going to be double the price essentially. So a fantasy is quite difficult. But equally, people are more likely to purchase a longer audiobook or use their Audible credits, their monthly credits, for a longer audiobook. So it's a mixed blessing. Of course, the royalty split deal on ACX, which is what I do for my fiction, you pay nothing up front. You just pay half of the royalties to the narrator for 7 years. So you have to decide where you expect to make your money with audio. Then, of course, the other option is to skip Audible ACX altogether and record your own audio and sell it direct from your website. Now, this is actually something I'm going back to. I used to do it up until December 2014 when the EU digital VAT laws came in, but I'm about to start doing this again. So essentially, you could record, as I'm doing, I'm recording this video in my home, you can record your own audio as long as it's decent quality. People are fine with that, but it needs to be decent. Like, you can't have sirens going and all that kind of stuff, but you don't necessarily need to hire a studio if you're selling direct. Then you can use, you produce it as an MP3 file, and then you use one of these options to sell direct. Sendowl, Gumroad, Payhip, Sells, eJunkie, all of these sites, Shopify, enable you to actually sell your products directly to consumers. Or you can use a site like Teachable or do an online course, that type of thing. So there are options for selling audio without actually going through a site like Audible, which of course takes a quite a big chunk out of your money. So personally, I will continue to do fiction through ACX up until, you know, I become a gazillionaire and can just produce it all myself. And then for nonfiction, I'm going to be reading it myself at home and selling it direct. So that's the production side. Let's talk about how to market audiobooks, because it's a kind of a different thing than marketing other books. So first of all, probably the biggest thing is your promo code. So when you self-publish an audiobook through ACX, they will send you promo codes to give away to listeners. And the reason you do this is so you can give free copies and people can leave a review, like ebooks and print books and anything else. Reviews are super important. So you'll get those promo codes. And then the important thing is you can get as many promo codes as you like. At the moment, at the time of recording, there is no limit to the number of promo codes you can get. So essentially, that can be really useful for getting your, you know, for giving away to your audience. You could do an email letter giveaway, you could do a Facebook giveaway, and actually give those promo codes to your list so that they start listening. Now, a way to do that when you have a series, of course, is to give away promo on the first audiobook in the hope that people will get hooked and want more in the series. The other thing many of us have noticed is if you do a promo for your ebook, like a BookBub, you will also get a sales spike in your audiobooks because, as I mentioned earlier, if people own the ebook, they can get the audiobook for a cheaper price. So even though it might not be, you know, huge income from that audio because of the special deal, you potentially, if it's first in series, you'll get a sell through. So it's a bit like giving away a free first in series. In general, you want people to get hooked. The other thing with the promo codes for Audible is clearly they want people to become Audible listeners. And by giving away those codes, they're encouraging listening, trying to change the culture. It's a very forward-thinking view. Just give away a lot of audio until people love it so much they can't go back. I also like the site audiobookblast.com, which enables you to give away audio codes to other people on their list of audiobook listeners. So again, it's a way of getting reviews, early reviews, and a sales spike with the potential that ACX might notice you and put you on the homepage, which can occasionally happen. Other things to do is use SoundCloud to put clips up. You can see there I've put Stone of Fire onto SoundCloud. You can use up to 5 minutes of your audio as a clip, and you can put that on your website. You can embed it on social media, on Facebook, etc. So SoundCloud.com is great for doing that. Then this is actually brand new. As I record this, it's only just come out. Audible has just announced clips. And so now you can share directly from Audible on your cell phone, for example. You can share up to 45 seconds of a clip and it will go on social media, it will go on email, it will go on Facebook. You can see there WhatsApp, email, SMS, Twitter, Messenger, Facebook. And the recipient does not have to be an Audible user, but there will be a link to find out more. So obviously they're encouraging you to share your audio lessons, but also the recipient to listen, and then they can potentially carry on listening to the audiobook. So this is fantastic, and I highly recommend that if you are an audiobook user that you start learning about this. If you're a listener, if you're an author with audiobooks, start telling your fans about this, because you want to encourage people to share clips and start to spread your audio everywhere. So before we move on to podcasting, here are some useful books if you want to learn more about audiobooks. Audiobooks for Indies by Simon Whistler. Simon is a voice talent and talks a lot about that. Also, How to Use ACX. Making Tracks, A Writer's Guide to Audiobooks by J. Daniel Sawyer is excellent if you are not in a country where you can use ACX, or if you're going to take this very seriously in other production ways. So that's really good if you want to take things a step further than the basic DIY. And then if you want to do narration, this book on narration is really handy as well. And then I have tons of links on thecreativepen.com/audiobooks if you're looking for more information. So let's now talk about podcasting and why podcasting is so amazing. Now, I've been podcasting since 2009, before it was a trendy thing. And here is why I think podcasting is so brilliant. So first of all, it helps you build a relationship with your audience. So the people who've been listening to the Creative Pen podcast for many years are super fans, basically. They've been listening to my voice for over 260 episodes, and considering my episodes are usually between 45 minutes to an hour, that's a lot of time they've been listening to me. And I mean, some people never even get that amount of time with their spouse every week. So that's a big deal. You can really create a community with your voice. You know, it's very, very intimate. You can also use a podcast and an interview format as a relationship building exercise between you and other people in your niche. And this is actually the reason I started the podcast in the first place. I wanted to connect with other authors, and I wanted a reason why they would talk to me. I didn't want to have to pay everyone for consulting. So I thought, okay, if I podcast and I market them, then they will want to do that, right? I mean, it's, you have to have some kind of technical ability to do this. So what I found is by offering interviews to other people, they were happy to talk to me because they got promoted. Then often they will link to your podcast. So either on social media, to their email list, if it's particularly good, maybe on their blog or their website. So you get incoming traffic, and that will mean that your site is more highly ranked. And then finally, that kind of word of mouth idea. I mean, I'm often talking to people, oh, I listen to this podcast, you know, go and check them out. It's a much more in-depth introduction to a person than just a tweet. It's, oh, go, you know, listen to that podcast and you'll get to know that person much more. And finally, I actually really enjoy my podcast, so it is fun and I get to connect with my community a lot, and also it helps you stand out. Now, there are a lot more podcasts in coming up now because it's become quite a trendy thing and the technology is available and it's much easier and there's a lot more resources than there were when I started out, but equally, it's still not as prevalent as, you know, if you take the number of people who've written a book, the number of those people who've got a podcast is much, much smaller. And of course, if you want to check out my podcast, you can go to thecreativepen.com/podcast, or you can check me out on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search for The Creative Pen. And I have over 260 episodes now, so lots to choose from. So how do you actually create a podcast? Well, I've put an exhaustive tutorial under thecreativepen.com how to podcast, so you can go and look that up. But here's just a brief flow. So first of all, you need to plan, and I research and connect with my guest. I will email them and I will give them a topic. Then I will email the week prior with a list of questions and reminder of the time that we're meeting. Very important, I think, to be professional around your communication with people, especially if they're higher profile. I, as someone who gets interviewed a lot, one of my pet hates is people not following up and reminding me of things and also demonstrating that they've done their research. It really annoys me when people ask for an interview and then by their questions, they clearly show that they haven't done their research. So definitely respect the time of the person you want to talk to. Or if you're doing more of a chat show, prepare in advance the topics you're going to talk about. Then I do my interviews on Skype, so I will record those. I use Ecamm, or which is for the Mac and Skype, or you can use Pamela to record on a PC. I use ScreenFlow to do my video editing, or you can use Camtasia, you can use iMovie, Movie Maker. There are lots of options. You can even use your phone these days, or an iPad or something like that. Once you've recorded your audio or your episode, you'll need to edit it, and you can use free software like Audacity. I use Amadeus Pro. If you're doing video, you can edit again in ScreenFlow, Camtasia, and that will give you your finished audio. There are some tools you can use to level the noise, and I explain that in my tutorial. Also, then you'll need to think about distribution, and there are various options for distributing to iTunes, which is the most important platform, but also things like Stitcher. So I use a plugin for WordPress called Blueberry, B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. Brry, and that's a great one. It also has hosting. I personally use Amazon S3 for hosting. Now, if all of these words have just blown your head off, don't worry. If you're not going to create a podcast, you can just skip over this. If you are going to create a podcast, go check out that in detail tutorial at thecreativepen.com/howtopodcast. And again, you'll get a link with the slides and all the hyperlinks at the end. So why is podcasting so brilliant for book marketing at the moment? So for one, there are more and more podcasts in all kinds of niches. So you can generally find, especially for nonfiction, you'll be able to find some great podcasts with a great audience. Now, people who listen know, like, and trust the person they listen to, especially if they've been listening a long time. So personally, I get a lot of nonfiction book recommendations from listening to podcasts. Two of my favorites are The Tim Ferriss Show and Unemployable with Brian Clark. And those two podcasts, I get a ton of recommendations for books from, because they interview people who I then go check out. Then I find their book, and that's a great way. Also, a longer interview in the audio sense is much better value than the amount of time you'll spend writing an article. So think about it this way. So you have a new book coming out. Let's say it is on business for authors, which is one of mine. And in the olden days, you would do like a blog tour and you would write all these different blog posts. And it's super hard work, actually. And if you think how much time it takes to write a number of different articles and then versus getting on a whole load of interviews on podcasts where you might have a 30-minute interview, it's a lot quicker, it's a lot more personal, it's a lot more in-depth. And also, when it's a conversation, people are far more likely to be interested than a dry article on a blog. So as far as I'm concerned, when people now ask me for interviews, I don't even do written interviews anymore. I will only do podcasts because I think there's such better value and a bigger return for the investment of my time. Plus, they're easier to do. If you are going to get on podcasts, the most important thing is this give, give, give. Very important. Provide so much value within the time you have and takeaways for the audience. Always be framing it in terms of what is the audience getting out of this interview? How can I make this applicable for people? And those benefits are what's going to make the person check you out. It doesn't matter if you're talking about the very best bits of your book. It will be more likely to make them check you out. So give, 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 and do not keep saying, well, you'll find that out in my book. If you say that even once, you will turn people off and they will not be interested. So the aim is to give so much, people think you're amazing, and then they will check out your book. So if you want to pitch a podcaster and get onto a podcast, the very first thing is you must listen to the show. Do your research about the host and be very honest. Are you a good fit? Do they even take pitches for the podcast? Do you have credentials? Do you have enough to give to the audience? So again, one of my pet hates, there are two types of pitches I get, for example. The first one is, hi blogger, hi podcaster, hello podcaster. I've written a book on financial planning. I'd like to come on your show. I just ignore emails like that. I don't do financial planning. You know, they should be pitching a person. It should be Dear Joanna, for example, and they should be only pitching shows that talk about financial planning. Or for example, I don't do health and fitness unless it's to do with dictation and standing desks, writing, that type of thing. I'm not going to do, there are lots of things that I am not going to cover on the podcast. I'm not going to do how to use spreadsheets or, stuff like that. So you must have a good fit for the show and you must do your research about the host and the procedure for getting guests on the show. The other thing I get a lot is, hello, my first book is coming out. Can I come on your podcast and talk about it? Again, where are the credentials from that person? Where is the value for my audience from a first-time author? Unless it's somebody who has built an amazing business in another way and their first book is telling people about that. So, there may be situations, but someone who's just written their first novel is not necessarily going to be a good fit for the Creative Pen podcast, which is I'm aiming it to be a master's degree in being an author, essentially. And the other thing is, a personal connection is best. Those of you who listen to my show will know that I've often made friends with people on my podcast and then invited them back over time. I would much rather talk about a recent development with somebody who I know and we have a good rapport, rather than having somebody brand new who I might struggle to develop a rapport with. So it's an interesting balance when you're an interviewer and a host, because you have to make it a conversation. And some people, particularly authors, can be difficult. So if you make a personal connection with a podcaster, that's always going to be the best way to get on a show. For example, take one of their courses, you know, listen regularly and tweet their latest show, you know, share their show on social media, make sure you're noticed, meet them at a live event, and eventually, you know, becoming part of their community will mean you are more likely to be invited at some point. So be useful to them and they are more likely to invite you on the show. Right, so I hope that you found this useful and that you've learned something you can use about audiobooks and or podcasting. And you can get the slides, you can download the slides with all the links, and I've got some more links that are included in the slide pack at thecreativepen.com/fringe2016 with the password indie, and that will take you to the download page. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint, which talks about writing, your publishing options, book marketing, and making a living with your writing, and that is at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. So you can also tweet me at The Creative Pen or email me if you have any questions. So thanks for listening, and I wish you all the best with your audio projects. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.